What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to the Comments from the Peanut Gallery podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Kurtz, sitting here with a special guest, my good friend, the Super Jew, Micah Haas. How you doing, my friend?
I'm fan-freaking-tastic, man. One of my favorite people to talk to outside the fight game or inside the fight game, and I'm super excited we finally got this opportunity. There's been a couple opportunities for us to talk, and different things have came up to make it so we can't, so I'm glad we finally got this opportunity, man.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Long time coming on this side. So real quick here on the jump, we just want to give a quick shout-out to a couple of sponsors here on our side with comments from the Peanut Gallery. We want to give a shout-out to www.mmatees.shop. That is these designs like here. There's the Big Toe Showcase campaign that's out right now on the site. Everyone from Cody Brundage, Chris Gutierrez, some different martial arts themed apparel and merchandise, stickers, all those sorts of things out there. So make sure that you check out www.mmatees.shop. They are a martial artist and fighter owned company, so make sure that you give them some love out there. We also want to give a shout out to jockofuel.store. If you go to jockofuel.store, you can use the code MMA plug for 10% off of anything there in the store. But now, I want to kick this opportunity off real quick. My man, do you have any sponsors you want to shout out?
First and foremost, I want to shout out you. Because since the get-go, and this guy actually commentated my very first fight here in Colorado, from the moment, gave me mad appreciation and helped build me. One, I think, as far as a regional scene is concerned, you're top dog as far as, one, correct information, two, up-to-date information, and most importantly, supporting us, pushing us, and helping drive us, regardless of what gym and where we're at. And that's one thing, you know, I train at Genesis Training Academy. This is Factory X. You're not someone who just pushes media for them, which, like, someone for me from the outside, that's something I gotta appreciate and respect a lot of. I do want to take that moment to reach out to my sponsors. For me, my sponsors are pretty big companies for me. A couple things strict for me when it comes to branding myself. I'm not gonna let any company brand me or me brand them that I so 100% don't support, don't use in my daily life. Two, 100% American made, American owned, and small based companies. I've had already some opportunities to take some sponsorships from some bigger sponsors through the connections I have. And I've already turned some down knowing that they don't make their products in America or they can't really prove where they're bringing in their products and things from. But first and foremost, Shoulder, which is a local based clothing brand, just started about a year out here in Colorado. Shoulder, basically the concept is that shoulder to lean on, that's someone to be there for. It is a streetwear, alternative, like outerwear, snowboarding, skateboarding, and things like that. But the whole base of the company is, one, supporting American company, but two, the whole idea is supporting, especially with men, mental health and mental health studies and mental health support. A large portion of their profits go towards that, specifically for veterans. They started this company off on one of their close friends who's a sergeant in the military who was killed after suicide, due to suicide after his service. So I am a family member of a lot of military members. I'm also a member to someone who's committed suicide in family. So it's a super big company for me. Fitsoul, which is one of the leading based gyms out here in Denver. We're on Zion Street and we have another location in Littleton. It's a plethora of different types of workout program. There's gonna be a lot and we'll go through them, not all right now, but bounce around through some of the sponsors. But for now, let's start here. We'll start there. We'll get back to it just because I'll bring it up. One thing I want to give this guy, for one, supporting us and just supporting me especially. I have a couple of gifts from a couple of my sponsors. Another one of my big sponsors, and you know, not every single fighter is involved in cannabis use, and we have to be careful with it. But I 100% do use cannabis. I use cannabis strictly as a medicine. I don't agree with using the terms, you know, weed and getting high and things like that. I think it dumbs down the community that it is. This company, which is their phenomenal Ritual, they're based here in Colorado. They're owned by a close friend of mine named Jordan Gardy. The big thing about these is, nowadays, when you're going into dispensaries, the only thing they're talking about is the level of THC. THC is a great cannabinoid, but there's several other cannabinoids that are very important to your health. These are one-to-one ratio. The only one-to-one ratio that I know, what one-to-one ratio means, it's 50% THC and then 50% other leading cannabinoid. So it's not going to be high level THC. You're still going to get good stimulant and a great buzz off of it, but it has other types of great medical benefits for you. So there's three different types. Boost, which is the one that you're going to use for your daily amount, as THCV, which is basically your vibrant THC. It's going to cause boosting and it's going to give you a good upper. One that I use throughout my day, because I have a crazy brain that goes too fast, is Arise. Some people use it as a wake up. It's CBD, which most people are familiar with. It's great for your brain. It's great for recovery. It's great for muscle relaxation. One that I'm addicted to, and I'll use that word because one, I use marijuana every day, is the Doze CBN. CBN, which is one of the hardest cannabinoids to get in dispensaries. That thing will put you to freaking sleep. So Ritual, check them out. They're almost in every single local dispensary now. They've been blowing up. Check them out. Try them out. I'm not sure if you are a cannabis user, but if not, right, I'm sure you have some friends. Awesome. I'm a big fan. 100% locally used products, almost 100% organically made products, 100% organic cannabis-based terpenes as well inside of it. The other gift I got for you is, are you Jewish?
I'm not.
No, but he reps and he supports us so much. I got to get you one of my fight kit shirts, a little Super Jew shirt, a little comic book style. Okay. So this is for you. Awesome. It has a couple of my sponsors on there as well.
There you go. There you go.
This sweatshirt very made very well. I'm a little sweaty, so I'm going to take this off.
Awesome. Thank you, bro.
My absolute pleasure, man. I'm really happy we got this to finally kick off. I was supposed to interview with Jordan about a month and a half ago when I had an opponent for the last Fury card here in Denver. And after my fourth opponent pulled, I had to take on one of his teammates here at Factory X, Alex
Rego,
and obviously conflict of interests, we had to set it apart. But now that we got that out of the way, we can actually, you know, come back and be a little more civilized, if you want to call it that. And that was a great bout, and I was happy to go with Alex, and that fight was super close, and it definitely would have could have gone anyway, depending on how you saw it, depending if you felt, you know, submission attempts to be a big point thing and based off that. So I'm happy. You can call it lucky that I got that win. Better be lucky than good in this sport, more or less, right? Mm-hmm. The one thing that, you know, I love talking to Jordan about is, one, we talk big at UFC, but we also talk like regional scenes, LFA, the Fury scene, all these other promotions, all these other local guys. Colorado is such a mecca for MMA, but it's also so small, especially like my weight class at 125. You know, you're constantly trying to build a plan, your 1 year goal, your 2 year goal, your 3 year goal. And you're thinking, who am I going to fight here? Who am I going to fight there before I get there? And, you know, we definitely have lofty goals and dreams. And one thing we talk about is like, I've been matched up with a couple Factory X guys before. I don't think it's going to be the last time, especially prior to UFC, but I can see myself and other guys, Oscar and stuff like that, fighting each other, come to UFC and things like that. So, I'm excited for that because I'm excited to fight the regional guys. I think a lot of dudes, not this gym doesn't. They face a lot of local, Elevation does, but I notice a lot of gyms specifically leave the state. They try to get out to other regional programs to get like kind of easy wins and things like that. And the fact of the matter is if like you can go 3-4-0 in a Colorado promotions, you're going to look a lot better than if you're going with somebody else and, you know, things like that. But
I totally agree with that. You know, I mean, seeing it from the, you know, my own two eyes, whether it's in the gym or on some of our cards with, say, like Colorado Combat Club or something of that nature, you know, there is sometimes where you'll see someone come in, and it's not to completely slight or knock a kid coming from some of these different parts of the country, because they can only face who's put in front of them, especially right, if they're coming from elsewhere.
Right.
It's not, but there are some who come from certain parts of the country where they'll have, you know, a 4-2, a 5-1, something like that type of record. And then they come in and, you know, not to, again, like, it's not trying to just share gym tales or whatever, not trying to cross that boundary, right, but we have amateurs who tool some of these guys, right, who have, yeah, a good on paper professional record.
Yep.
But that's just the caliber of talent that, one, that we have here at Factory X, but then two, just of what the local scene produces out of here. You know, it's not just us, there's guys who are competing on the big scene from your gym to mm-hmm. Elevation mm-hmm. And so
even
on and
some
so forth.
Smaller gyms have, you know, a guy or two and things like that.
Right.
Even gyms like I haven't heard of.
But like, wow, at large, you know, I just feel like, as you mentioned, the concentration of talent, you know, you're getting some of these guys that are coming up on the amateur scene who, you know, whether it's somebody out of Elevation, who I think that one of the kids who's the biggest thoroughbreds on the scene right now is Elias Rodriguez, who's still an amateur right now. He's Corey Sanhagen's understudy
there. Oh, I've seen this tall kid.
Yeah. I mean, just so smooth.
He got that one guillotine choke against
against Day
a little while back. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To win the Colorado Combat Club title
at Elevation, and he's nasty. Yeah. His range,
he's so
his
young,
range control
so
is really
smooth.
Really good. I literally sparred with him the first time I went to Elevation, and then your first time you go to the gym, you kind of want to, you know, like, be respectful. You don't want to, like, try to take people's heads off, but obviously you don't want to get your head took off.
Right.
And I went to go train with Carlos Vasquez.
Carlos Valdez.
Valdez, yes. I always mispronounce his name. I apologize, my guy.
Love
I appreciate
Carlos.
You. Yeah, and I'm looking forward to getting more sessions with them and cross training. And again, that's one of the great things I love about Colorado. And, like, that's the one thing. It's like, you know, people talk like gym animosity and things like that. And from the outside, I think, like, you could see it, but what really is this insane level of competition between, like, high level gyms. And, like, today our coach, I don't know if you know this, but your guys' coach, Mark Montoya, and my coach, Jake Ramos, playing golf right now. So they're having, you know, a day out and stuff like that. So, like, you know, there's that side of the scene where, you know, you want to promote your fight. So you want to, you know, make it look like something more. And there's that side where you really want to represent your gym and be proud of where you come from. But at the end of the day, we all have mad respect for each other, win or lose. Like, it's great to see the regional scene get pushed outside the regional scene. But yeah, when I trained with those guys, Carlos, he's a beast. And we were supposed to fight. I had a big injury. I had to pull out of that fight. And, you know, maybe down the line, me and him fight again. Who knows? I don't think so. I think I'm a true 25er. I think I'm going to stay at 25. I might go back to 35, depending on how my body is and how I put on some weight. That's something that I have been working on a little bit. People think I'm a big, big 25er. And it's all fake muscle. It's all bloated. I'm not as big as people think. My weight cuts aren't that big. So I think I can put more muscle on, more size, and be, you know, Aljamain Sterling of the 25 division, more or less. But when I train, when I spar with, what's his name?
With Elias.
Elias, Jesus, man. His range is insane. His distance management is insane. And then I'm someone that I feel very good everywhere. So I was like, let's see where I can put this kid. And, man, he was throwing up triangles. And
he's slick on the
dude, ground. He's super slick. And I didn't know who he was necessarily. I saw him fight once or twice. He's definitely a little bit larger than me, but that kid is definitely going to – that kid's definitely going to be something. And that's what I was going to ask you. Out of the last, like, couple of shows that you've been at, because I've been at the last – couple of regional shows that you've commentated at, who else do you think is someone who's going to step up, either like as an amateur now or a small pro, more or less?
Amateur, I think that Elias really is kind of that dark blue chip, yep, type of prospect, just because he's so young, he's so good everywhere, he trains with a good camp and has good people around him who are seasoned within the game, and he does have it's you know, he's that next wave, I feel like, of fighters. And I think that there's some who are probably just still, you know, maybe only have a fight or two that,
sure,
but I'm not ready to give them the crown just yet, just because of those first couple of matchups. A lot of times you might be against another debutant or someone that's also within similar on paper experience, mm-hmm, but this kid is now multiple fights deep into his MMA career as far as an amateur goes. He is also undefeated in Muay Thai. Yep. I just commentated his last Muay Thai fight a few weeks ago. Then as far as grappling, he started as a grappler from a young age. He's that next generation of kid who's been doing everything for a long time. Right. And I just feel like once these guys who are kind of teenagers right around and now, there's a kid who's going to be making his debut on the next Colorado Combat Club card, Esli Rascón, who this kid is, I mean, he's the second coming of Brandon Royval. He's coming out of here, out of Factory X. He fights a talented kid. Yeah, 19 years old. Wow. I mean, he's been training here since he was a younger teenager. Just kind of the same how Brandon started with Mark when he was an early teenager, and they're similar long, lanky builds that are just that never stop pace.
Yep.
They're relentless. They're good absolutely everywhere that you want to take it.
Two things that you're not going to see.
So I think that's a kid to keep the eye on. But like I say, I mean, he's only about to make his debut. So we still have to see how he performs there.
Who was it to just was the main event for the Colorado Combat Club?
Carlos Rivera.
Yes. I fought him. He beat me, submitted me. I think, and I don't mean to talk improper about the guy at all, but when I was leading up to fighting him, even, you know, not people necessarily in his corner, but people that knew him were saying like, hey, this guy's not necessarily someone that like takes it as seriously as he should, blah, 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 blah. And he did miss weight against me by quite a few, which I'm okay with. But I've now followed him, and I typically don't follow people like regionally. I typically don't follow anyone that I don't know. I don't follow. Like for me, social media is something that like, I want to see my friends. I don't want to see necessarily influencers, even like professional fighters. Like I think the only like UFC fighter I really follow is like Rose Namajunas, because she lately is like my favorite fighter of all time. I think it's kind of important to like put blinders up and don't necessarily like get fed into watching other people's success more or less, and get like, you know, addicted to, you know, watching others and things like that when you should just be focused on yourself and stuff. But we become like pretty cool and we talk a lot and stuff like that. And I see his work and he grinds and he looked really good in his debut.
Looked
and
great in that last fight. I mean,
he hits hard. He's the only person who's hit me where I'm like, okay, that's legit. Like,
and he's a like dog. Yeah, you know, he's a dog. I mean, he's dog tough. He's relentless as far as
how he's doing a lot of good stuff down there too.
Definitely. You know, and they have another hot young pro prospect, Swift Smith, who's coming out of there.
Yep.
Gilbert's son. Yep. And you know, he comes up and he gets some work up here. I don't know if you know
that.
But
I saw that.
Well, Gilbert is a legacy here. He won the RFA world title as a part of Factory X back in the day, you know, so it's nothing but love between between us there. And you know, I think that kid, you know, I got to see him fight from the very early stages coming up through the amateur ranks. And you know, Elijah is a kid who you can't teach speed. Like there's a lot of things that you can't develop skill wise and all, but to be that fast, that's just something that you have.
Yeah.
And you know, he's a kid who has a lot of confidence too as well. And I think that he's only going to continue to grow and develop. You know, he's had some experience with some really good opponents already in his young career. I think that's going to pay dividends for him in the long term. But I think the guy who he's fought on a couple of those top tier feeder shows, but not really in a fixture, like a main event or a co-main yet, but he's fought tough guys in his last couple of fights, in his last three fights really, is Luis Grillet. Luis Grim Grillet, he just won against Carlos Loyoza or Lozoya, excuse me, a few weeks ago on a Fury card. Okay. And I mean, just completely beat out of here, out of Factory X. Okay. He is
What's his name?
Luis Grillet.
Is he a 25er or no?
Yeah, little 25er.
Little, he's knocking everyone out?
Yes.
And stuff? Yeah.
He's a wrestler.
Yeah.
He has a wrestling background.
His brain is perfect. He hasn't
even had to go into that yet.
Wow. Yeah.
The only time that he really had to use his grappling was he did have a tough first round against Rodney Mandala.
Okay.
And
he's fighting good kids. He's fighting good guys.
He's fighting good guys.
Just dropping balls.
Before that, just 21 days before that fight, he fought Jason Scott,
Jason Scott is a
really top prospect who is highly rated.
Tough champ.
Traveled
I
the world
twice and I thought he was out both times and he recovered quickly.
Yeah.
He did not recover against your boy.
Oh, I mean,
it was like backhand,
the
right?
Backhand.
Like, well,
that,
backhand.
That was
those punches you don't see that get you, man.
Yeah, you know, Luis is just one of those guys who he has all these physical tools, right? But he's that kid who when you finally meet someone who has the mental side that goes along with being physically gifted
in what they do.
And then on top of it, when it comes to fighting, you know, there's a lot of people out there who have tremendous skill and who have technique for days, but they're not mean.
Don't want to get hit.
And just on top of it, like, you know, on the punishment side, they're not just mean and just want to do everything that they absolutely can to make you feel the most ridiculous level of uncomfortability and pain and whatnot. Luis is not that guy. Luis is the guy who has all of the physical tools to be with some of the best in the world. I mean, he's been body clones for multiple top ranked opponents out of our gym or top ranked guys.
Like
you know, like he was bodies for Brandon Royval multiple times.
Sure.
He was bodies for Chris Gutierrez to Jonathan Martin. You know,
he's big 25er. He's dense and he's that perfect frame. He's hard to hold. You're not gonna choke that guy. You're not gonna get, you know, he's like a Volkanovski of the 25ers.
Absolutely, and just relentlessly violent, you know, in the process. So I think when you have that combination of someone who has the physical tools, but is also one, just fight smart, and two, he has a geology background. Started off initially going to Colorado School of Mines, then went down to Adams for a better wrestling scholarship opportunity. So I mean, he's a ridiculously smart kid. So him having the ability to process things and critically think on a much higher level, and then once he goes into there, like, he just talks about how, you know, he wants to find, almost, it's almost like something taken out of 300 in a sense, but he's big on the Stoics.
Sure, yeah.
And saying that, you know, like, when we really get down to those bare dog moments of our existence, when we're pushed to the brink, when our legs are so heavy that they feel like our feet are trapped in concrete, mm-hmm. our chest is beating so hard that our heart feels like it's about to explode. Right. The lungs feel like they cannot even begin to start pumping blood. Your arms are like cinder blocks. But when you get to that moment, you find out who you really are.
Right.
He said he's still trying to figure out if there's someone who could take him to that point. And when he told me that, I was just like, Jesus, that's dude, great. Like, that's goosebumps.
That's how it should be, trying to chase your ego.
And just destroy, knowing how much of a destroyer that he is, in the process, and is willing to, you know, is willing to go and do.
Yeah, I see him making it to whatever he wants to do and things like that. It's like the correct answer to that, though, to who is a big up-and-comer, who's right now making moves.
The Super Jew?
Super Jew, yes. I gave you a huge opportunity, but you didn't take it. No, I'm just kidding. But secondly, I'm also kind of ashamed you didn't put the shirt on. I'm just kidding. No, you don't have to fucking put the shirt on. I'm just fucking with you, buddy. A side note, it kind of sounds like it's on the same tangent, but it's something that I talk about with some people. But all right, so do you think Bo Nichols has that in him? Do you think he's got that dog in him?
I think we haven't had to see it be brought out of him yet. But
no, we haven't at all. But do you think it's there?
I think that you don't get to the level of competitor that Bo Nickel is without having a dog in you, you know, I mean, he's going through.
There's dogs, but there's dogs that don't like being hit, though. That's what I'm saying. You think that there guy's okay with getting hit? And you think when it's getting it bad and he gets a broken nose or a cut eye or laceration that he's going
to fight? That's the only thing is I don't want to either crown or crucify him yet point.
Sure.
Just simply because we haven't had to see him in that position yet. Everybody that
I'm excited to see how far.
I think has kind of been a really good opportunity for him to employ his game plan.
Like Jamie Pickett, like, come on, that was a perfect match.
Yeah, and I mean, let's not act like that finish wasn't initiated by a knee to the nuts.
Yeah,
like that was absolutely.
Yeah, but I don't think that dictates a fight. But
I don't think that would have dictated the outcome. But that created the takedown.
Yeah,
that created the takedown that then led to the finishing sequence. That's more or less my point.
The reason I bring it up is, one, I'm excited to see if he does, and you definitely have to have a type of dog to be one of the best wrestlers in the country, in the world. Just it's an insane type of work ethic that you have to get. I actually remember seeing him when he was really young. I remember watching Kyle Snyder. I don't know, you know, Kyle Snyder is Olympic wrestler, gold medalist. I remember watching him when he was like 14 years old in Colass National Room in Maryland. And like, it was him and his brother or his cousin. I'm not sure if they were directly related by brother or not, but, like, he was always getting dogged. He was a little, you know, he wasn't like chubby, but he was not an athletic kid like that. And it's just insane to see what he is. But the reason I bring it up, one thing I'm excited about, and it affects my division a lot, is you're seeing a lot of these like insanely high level wrestlers, NCAA finalists, Big Ten champions, All Americans that are like, even prior to them finishing out their college career, they're, you know, posting on Twitter or Instagram, like, you know, NCAA champ and then UFC belt after that. I welcome all of them because one thing you will notice, there's two types of wrestlers. There's wrestlers that are just dogs and mean, and there's wrestlers that are really good at wrestling but not good at fighting. And there's been a lot of guys that like, you know, Colorado has the Olympic training facility. There's been a couple of those guys that have come around. I don't know if they've been in your gym and stuff like that, but have come in our gym, and their egos, man, can sometimes go like up and down because they're world champs. So they come in and they're thinking they're going to dog you, and then when you submit them, after you take them down, they're like, that's confusing. So then when you piece them up on the feet, they hate it and they start taking shots like they're back in, you know, fourth grade and stuff like that. So I'm excited to see all these wrestlers that are getting into it because there aren't enough of it. It's definitely going to change the philosophy, like how the fight game is coming in here. I think in 10 years, it's going to be a bunch of just NCAA wrestlers that control the divisions. But at the same time, I welcome a lot of them because a lot of them don't know they're not ready to be fighters and things like that.
Yeah, and I mean, I could offer the counter because we had a few weeks ago a few top, you know, multiple time All-American guys that came in from all around the country, from OU to ASU, Penn State.
There's definitely a lot. There's going to be ones coming out.
And there's some, though, that they are that next generation who just when it's, you know, when it's off season, you know, when it's not wrestling time, they've been working on the other martial arts for years
because
they've
had they're going to become world champs.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's a lot of them that think that.
Right.
And I welcome
that they can just transition right over. Like kind of the more traditional route, which, but I will say that there's kids like Liam Cronin, who is an All-American out of Nebraska. There's Kyle Parko, who's an All-American out of ASU. Like whenever those kids decide to make the transition, like, bro, they'll come in right now and they will beat probably 90%+ of the majority of the amateur scene out there in their respective weight classes.
What is the professional scene, man?
I mean, they would come in and immediately be able to win pro fights. But I'm not a fan of jumping into that immediately.
No.
You know, I mean, and some of them, it may, you know, that they're forced into that a little bit early than what they may have potentially wanted to do, just because then nobody wants to take the fight with them. Sure. And then the only time that they can actually start to get something is professional. But it's also, I just have issue with that because in the modern day, you know, you it's so tough to learn on the job. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like you should have a decent amount or have a few amateur fights underneath your belt to be able to just one, figure out what is your game. And then you got to figure out too, in the actual heat of the moment and competition, like it's different when you're out there fighting than when you're in the gym. How are you going to respond when you get clipped? Like when you're on the brink being put out and finished.
Has Bo Nickel figured that out in the room yet? That's a question I'm always asking when I watch those guys. Because, like, have they been clipped hard? Have they never been rocked yet? Have they never been knocked out yet? Have they never, like, hopefully you've never been knocked out yet, but, like, have you taken a shot that, like, you know, when the 2 ounce gloves come on? Because those UFC gloves are different, man.
I would like to think that he's had at least a little bit of awakening to it just based off of some of the people that he's trained with. And when he's gone down to places like ATT and whatnot, I would like to think that he's gotten at least some looks. But again, it's all completely different once you're in the heat of competition. And then even somebody like Bo, who he didn't just have to learn as a pro, like how some people, especially if you're in a state, you know, say like an Oklahoma or wherever, who they don't really have an amateur scene or certain parts that didn't, especially in yesteryear, where you got to turn pro right away and you got to go beyond that. But you can learn on some of these little shows like your XFNs to whatever else that's within the region and just local shows as a pro against maybe, for lack of a better term, some cans to get yourself a little bit of experience. But Bo Nickel was in the UFC right away. So all of his learning is on the very highest of levels. And it's hard to take steps back if you're immediately thrust in the spotlight.
You kind of saw that. You kind of saw that with that youngest kid to ever fight. When he,
well, I mean, we've seen it with a few different examples. We've seen it with, you know, the Chase Hooper's fighting on the card this weekend. We've seen it with Sage Northcutt. We've seen it.
Those were a little more noticeable and things like that. Getting on a different point because we shouldn't be talking about giving Bo Nickel this much of our time.
But I mean, I just feel like overall, though, it's a good point to make that some guys they get too eager to make the climb too quick.
So I've seen some guys that are literally like medalists, you know, in the freestyle and things like this, come train, take one amateur fight, think they're ready, go pro, then get hit hard, and they're like, I don't like getting hit. And you're like, you're gonna get hit, man. It's like
this is what you signed up for.
It's a guaranteed fact.
Like something that Coach Mark always says, like, you got signed up to, or you signed up to get hit, motherfucker. Like, that's a part of what this is. Like, that's what it is. You got to figure out how to push this stuff through.
That's like I had to do. Like, I had to realize that, like, you're not going to have 100% success at all times. So there's going to be exchanges you're going to lose. And what you're going to do with that, you know, you're going to go after and chase a guy and try to get a response, or you're going to settle in and realize you're going to get back whenever you want, kind of thing. But you went to that 1FC event, right? How was that? That was dope.
It was a, I mean, it was an incredible experience. It was awesome, honestly. You know, it was so a, much fun. It was a great experience. It's definitely, it's different than a UFC show.
Would you say it's the best show you've been to?
No.
No.
It was a really good show. Don't get me wrong, but I feel like just the overall energy and the atmosphere, especially compared to a couple of the big UFC pay-per-view shows that I've been to, just didn't compare.
What would you say is the biggest show that you've been to? It doesn't have to be biggest, but a show that you felt like was just different than anything else.
Well, UFC 241 out at the, I believe it's the Honda Center in Anaheim, when Nate Diaz beat Anthony Pettis and then called out Jorge Masvidal night. Yoel Romero fought Paulo Costa on that card. That was Stipe DC 2. Corey Sandhagen fought on that card.
Okay.
We had a couple of my buddies like Ian Heinisch and Devontae Smith. They fought on that card.
Okay.
So, I mean, just the atmosphere, was it the fight
or the atmosphere that made it so memorable?
I think it was the atmosphere because it was just such a live crowd that in general, that was the first time that Nate had been back in a while. Yeah, so it was a very live energy there. But then I saw John Jones fight down in Houston when he fought Dominic Reyes, and Derek Lewis was on that card, and just some of the different, like the fighters down there. And when Derek Lewis came out to Tops Drop by Fat Pat, bro, like it was definitely,
yeah, I remember watching that. Yeah. And you saw him, his whole soul drop because the moment got too big for him and things like that.
He won that fight. He fought Alir Latifi that card.
Okay.
It was and won that one.
Okay.
But yeah, he doesn't have the greatest record back home in Houston. But then also down in Jacksonville, UFC 273, I believe it was, when Volkanovski fought Zombie in the co-main event.
Yeah.
That was the main event. The co-main event was Sterling and Jan. But the crowd singing Zombie, like Zombie, you know, all due respect to him, he got obliterated in that fight. Yeah. But the atmosphere and the electricity of that entrance, bro, like it was something that was another level. Like, yeah. and maybe one could achieve that same sort of energy, pop, and feeling in a bigger arena if they continue to grow.
Sure.
But it's also like the traditional one crowd, even when you're watching their broadcasts overseas.
Yep.
The crowd is quiet.
It's a different type of crowd.
Once the fight starts.
Not to be disrespectful to UFC fans, but it seems like they're maybe a little bit more like involved in the fight and maybe a little like intelligently understanding what's going on. But yeah, there's obviously that Asian culture of like respect and kind of like being quiet. And like if you're watching like sumo competitions, like you're not allowed to talk during sumo competitions because they want to hear them like hitting each other and things like this. But man, the heartbeat while you're fighting.
Yeah,
that was crazy.
It's definitely like
literally you're fighting. Cool. There's a heartbeat. Boom, 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 boom.
Well, the one thing I didn't like was the MC getting on the horn sporadically. Sometimes he was saying like 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yeah, that was so bizarre because it started off just like 1 minute left, and then every now and then it was like 2.5 minutes.
I think like that's on your corner.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then two, like if you're going to do that, you need to specific do it the time. Same yeah, every single time. Yeah, like, you can't just be we were, like, radically making a joke doing
about
it.
That. But I think the specific time was supposed to be 2.5 and 1 minute for every round, basically.
Yeah, then sometimes you're saying 30 seconds left, like after saying a minute. Like,
but did it kind of still sound cool?
Like, I don't know. Like for me personally, like I was like, what is it this? Like that was bizarre to me.
Do you think that will work, that style, that like theatrics, that like the way they do it, do you think that will have success here?
I think that they need to continue to sign the right names that are going to appeal to stateside audiences.
Yeah.
I think that in the submission grappling department, they've made ventures that direction with signing young up-and-coming studs like Mikey Musumeci to the Ruotolo brothers. I think that's a great move there.
Yep.
Having ties with the Donaher crew, I think that's big.
Yep.
But you know,
all the nicest guys in the world, buddy. I got to work the 1FC event. I was with them all week long, and I was working with the fighters and things like that. Just like basically a chaperone and doing whatever they wanted to do for them and stuff like that. Mikey's legitimately the nicest person in the world. Sage Northcutt is 100% the person he acts like he is.
He made Mr. Faber really happy.
He's literally he's a freaking sweetheart. Faber, who I trained at that gym 15 years ago, it was my very first MMA gym I ever trained at. And that was at their other location way back. Alpha Male, and like he remembered me. I was like, hey, but he's like, how do I remember you? I was like, I trained at your gym way back, and like I was like, that's the nicest guys ever.
Yeah.
1FC signed me. I want to fight for them. So our goal right now is I fight July 7th. Nice. We took this fight specifically because it's in Vegas for Tough Enough, and it's the day before International Fight Week, so it's gonna be a huge fight community, hoping that like Sean Shelby and Dana White would be there in attendance. They were there last year when Tough Enough put on the fight there before that. So that's a big reason we took that fight. We might go and look at a three fight promotion deal with Fury, dependingly. But I made some awesome connections with ONE FC, and I would obviously love to fight for them. And he said they plan on coming back at least like three times in next year, maybe one more time to Denver. But I got to work with like some of their like head production people. I went from being like getting paid as like whatever to them needing people and just, you know, me taking initiative and things like that. But I was like talking in this woman named Wen's ear the whole time, and she's like was in charge of everything. I was like, if you're going to do this again, you have to have an undercard of local fighters, because like that's going to bring out all the local communities and all their family members. Because like when I fight, I'm going to bring, you know, 50, 60 fighters or fans. So if like you have 10 amateur fighters, five fights, you're going to bring in right there, you know, over 250, depending on how much they bring in. And it would just make it look better. Yeah, it's how Bellator does it and things like that. And I was talking to her and another one of the guys who's like one of the like executives. And he's like, yeah, we're thinking about that, blah, blah. But like, they're talking about pay and other different things. It's like, I was watching the cost they have to get everyone out here must have been just absolutely insane. And it was a very immense, dude, insane. And that's why they hired me. They didn't want to hire a whole staff of people from there in Singapore and fly them out here for the cost of that. So that's why I ended up having the opportunity to it. Thank God I did, because it was awesome. But that would just build them up so much, because one, it'll build up the American viewers and things like that, because it was really amazing. You know, Colorado is very, 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 very Caucasian. That ONE FC crowd was not. It was like a lot of Asian Americans and things like that. That was just like where they came out of the woodworks for it. And I was like, you know, you want to get everyone, you want to get a combination of it. You got to get the American viewers in, things like that. But apparently they did kill it. But
yeah, no, I mean, I thought the overall, just the opportunity to be there for what could potentially have been Mighty Mouse's last fight, you know, getting to see Rod Tang in person, seeing the electric cool personality thing of Stamp Fair Text, yeah, you know, just seeing some of those. And I mean, there was a couple of really good fights. I mean, RoboCop, it didn't go his way, but that fight was, that was a banger through and through.
What's the guy he fought? His name?
The Swedish guy. I can't remember his name off the top.
Sebastian something. He was training at our gym leading up to that for like a week and a half. He literally was practicing his elbows like the whole freaking week, like step in elbows and things like yeah. that. And was it you that was talking or somebody else? I can't remember who I was talking to. Oh no, is so one of my sponsors and one guy who kills it for me. And one thing that I do a lot, and you know, I want to talk about what I do now and where we're going and where I'm growing to and what we're trying to build here. You know, a couple months ago, this whole last year, and every year is tough, right? Like you go through these constant ups and downs, and like if you ever think life's gonna get easier, you're stupid. Life just gets tougher and tougher. Every year I've always tried to like judge myself as a professional, and like also like, you know, try to add every fight you win or lose, you want to add something onto your fight game, either if it's how you train or how you eat or how you operate or how you think and things like that. And then like simultaneously in the fight game, you got to deal with life, and like life hits you so hard that you have to put that into your fight games. Like, how am I going to deal with this while I'm in fight camp and things like that and things like this. But like the last year has been a crazy, crazy year. I lost my mom, you know, about 6 months ago, almost to cancer that came insanely fast. And both my parents are quite old, so it's not something that I haven't pre-planned in my life already, but that my mom is my favorite person ever. I know, you know, from me commenting most of my fights, pre-fight and post-fight, the first thing I say is I love you, mom. Yeah. So that was really, really tough. I'm a big giver, and I find myself that when I'm in a relationship, I become very committed to people too much. And especially as a professional athlete, it has to be very selfish. Right. You can't do that. So I was in a relationship that wasn't a bad relationship, but it definitely was. Look how nice I am for production, guys. Look at this. You should sign me for production. That has consumed way too much of my energy, soul, and money. So I had to get rid of that. Out of my life. And then I had a great job where I was making, you know, 25 hours a week, making $80,000, you know, so working with my schedule, doing everything I wanted, thinking that I was able to do all of it, and then realizing like I can't do all this, and we went our separate ways with that business. And like all these things happened all while I was getting ready for my pro debut. I was dealing with some medical issues. We thought I had cancer and things like that. We thought I had a type of rare skin cancer. And right after my mom died, it freaked me out. So all training camp up for my pro debut, like my mindset was crazy. But it wasn't necessarily crazy. Like it was, I controlled it. I basically said that like, the more I lose, the better it is for me, because the less I'll have in my way, I can focus on the fighting and things like that. And, you know, it's been wonderful. All the hardship has been wonderful for me, because it's like, you know, if you can survive that, have four different opponents pull out, have to fight a tough guy from Factory X on week and a half notice for both guys tough. You know, if I can get through that, we can get through anything, right? And that's kind of the thing I was talking about, you know, with wrestlers and things like that. Wrestlers do have that mindset, but like not all of them are fighters. And it's interesting to see how some people are affected by it and what they do and how they choose to respond to it and things like that. But yeah, it's a crazy fight game. It's crazy what it does to you. What it does to your mind, your ego. And you sometimes feel like you have to fake your ego to keep your ego going, to make sure you won't wake up in the morning. And then some mornings, you know, you wake up and you realize your ego is in that perfect state where you can just kill it no matter what, or even when you're not in the mindset to do it or anything like that. But yeah, one thing I wanted to talk about, and one thing I wanted to basically give you the opportunity to have is me talking about my fight story, why I do this, you know, what's my purpose and goals and things like this. And I have a few goals with it. One thing I get, but I really cannot stand when I hear like fighters say this, that like, oh, I do this for my family, or, you know, I do this for my kids, I do this to provide something for my family, and this is the only way I know how. You know, there's that like, it's a rhetorical statement, but there's that statement when, you know, told make a coal miner, someone can do computers, what do you call it? Coding. Make a coal miner coding. Like, yeah, we're doing it for ourselves. We're doing it for our own ego. If it really came down to you, like, and you know, there are amazing stories, you know, like, you know, Charles Arbear coming from Brazil and making fortunes for his family. Obviously, that is what should have been done. Great for him.
And I think this should be prefaced by saying, if you're in a different part of the world or different story.
It is 100% different
versus
story.
If we're saying like doing it like here.
We have so many opportunities in America. Regardless, you're intellectual, you can make money in any way. And I've made money in a lot of different ways. It's with and without a degree, you can absolutely do it. So like when people say, oh, I do this because of that, it's like, it's crazy that you have success because you're lying to yourself like every day. Because the reason we do this is for ourselves. Because one, this is the most selfish sport that there is. One, we destroy our bodies. We are utterly destroying our minds. So, and certainly later, you're going to have to face the knowledge that CTE is going to creep up on us. And you know, your probability of success is probably the smallest of almost any sport. One, not because of field amount of people, but two, because how you got to strike lightning, right? You got perfect timing, perfect age, you know, perfect fights, no injuries, none of this, you know, nothing in life getting in your way. So it's like, it's crazy when people say like, oh, I'm doing all of this for myself. So one, the reason I fight, I do it for myself. I do it.
And it's shit money till you get to the top.
Yeah, exactly. Trust me. It's shit money. I make, yes. And that's why we're going to talk about the five different things I do to make sure I can do this fight game now. Because again, every fight, I try to say I'm a true professional, and you know, every fight and every week I'm adding something on to becoming more and more professional, quit my job. And now I'm teaching a lot and stuff like that. And that's something that has been insanely rewarding. I've always been a teacher and things like that. But on the tangent that we were just talking about, so it's my ego is disgusting. And when I one thing in my classes I talk to people is ego, is teaching ego. We should be able to control ego. We should understand our ego. We should know when we should have a elevated ego, and there are times for that, and there's times when we should have the opposite. We should be able to pull down our ego and be humble and knowledgeable that we don't know what we're talking about and things like that, which is something that's hard for me naturally. I'm egotistical 100%, narcissistic 100%. I think every fighter basically is. I think anyone who wants to be an individual star in any way is.
And that's not just athletics, though. That's the person who wants to be that top entrepreneur out there in the business world.
Yeah,
or if you're in the corporate world, climbing the ladder and trying to be that C-level executive. You know, like that's anybody who's on the high level. You've got to have a certain amount of selfishness and blinders to it.
Because blinders, exactly.
If you don't, then you're never going to get to those types of levels that are at the top of the mountaintop.
Yep. If you drag a lot of people with you, you're not going to get that far. And it is sad that, like, you know, they say there's not a lot of friends at the top and things like that. And I'm nowhere to the top. But one thing I've had to do is cut off a lot of friends. I would never cut off family. I've lost too many of my family. I've cut off my family. And luckily I have family in position now that they're in good places. But if I cut out a lot of, like, long-standing relationships because it's just not serving me and my selfish intent of where I want to be in the future and things like that. I fight, one, to keep my ego down and to keep my ego high. And one of the other biggest reasons I fight, which, one, I love that it is becoming more and more popular to talk about, and I see fighters talking about more and more. But at the same time, I really am upset with how I'm seeing it talked about in certain ways, and I wanted to address it, is mental health and things like this. I come from a family. I'm the youngest of five brothers. I've lost half my brothers. I lost one of my brothers to police brutality. He was killed by cops in a chase because he didn't strap his seatbelt on. I lost another brother when I was 13 years old to committing suicide. And that was the hardest thing in my freaking life. He was my best friend. And, you know, that put a lot of darkness inside myself. And I've dealt with suicide tendencies and deep, deep depression all throughout my life. And I've been someone who self-manifestation, I've been a therapist and things like that, but luckily I've just been in having good surroundings and being a good place and having a mind that's, like, been able to process it through all the craziness that I had to go through as a childhood. Cause I went through some insane stuff that it was basically like, I've made it through this, so I can get through this. It's the kind of thing I've always been able to tell myself and
go through it to get to it.
Yeah, exactly. Go through it to get to it. Exactly. I love that. But the biggest thing is, you saw like Patty talking about it and things like that. He had a friend commit suicide. He was just talking to him the other week and things like that. I know, in my darkest times, I've reached out to people and be like, hey man, I'm not feeling so good. I'm feeling really bad, or even, hey, I'm feeling suicidal. And what you get from most people is, oh, me too. Or I understand, man. And that's like the worst thing that you can say to somebody who's feeling that. Cause if you say, I understand, one, it doesn't really give you an opportunity to lead anything on. Most people are like, oh yeah, I understand where you're coming from, man. Like, I'm sorry you're there. And they think that's it. And you're like, man, I just released to you one of the hardest, darkest things to say. It's the most embarrassing, hardest thing to ever say to somebody, to say that. So when they respond, I understand, or, oh, I know what you're going through. Man, this whole last week's been so hard for me. That sends people in some really, really dark spirals. And I've seen it. I've been there. I've seen it done to friends. And I've been on the opposite where I understand. I'm like, oh, my friend's calling me right now at 1 a.m. Not because he's had a drink or he wants to talk about some video game. He's calling me right now because he might not go to the next morning and things like that. And there's situations, there's ways that are really easy to identify that. And there's better ways that I think we can go about dealing with it. And that's one thing that I'm really big about, is I want to get about, yes, suicide prevention, but suicide prevention comes with suicide education, and education comes with talking about it. And talking about it just doesn't mean, hey, I'm depressed. Because every single one of us, we all talk about, we're all depressed. And that's one of the things I talk about. And I train my clients is have your ego. I don't want you going out there looking for fights. You better be a pacifist in your lifestyle and, help the person out that needs it. But at the same time, don't walk around with your chin down. Love yourself. Be egotistical. Understand that you're a badass. You're living in a hard place to live in, a hard world to live in, a hard time to live in, and you're surviving it. Applaud yourself. And so many people nowadays are insanely depressed, and some of them don't understand, and maybe not necessarily as depressed as they think they are, and their life isn't as bad as it is. But that's not our place to say this, but there's a lot of ways that we can start educating ourselves properly. And the best way that we can, there are a bunch of different types of ways of doing it, but easiest way, don't make it on someone else to reach out. If you have a sad friend, I guarantee you, he's sad. Like all my friends know that sometimes they don't hear from me for a couple weeks to reach out to me. And sometimes I haven't reached out to him for 3 weeks because I'm insanely busy. Sometimes I haven't reached out to him in 3 weeks because I'm insanely depressed. And that text I get from them, opens up the clouds and brings sunshine, and it's huge. So on that little tangent, just talk to people, reach out to people, be a good friend, be a good family member. If you haven't called your mom and your dad, and you look in your last call log and they're not in that call log, you should be calling your mom and dad. You should be checking in with these people that are important to you and that are, you're important to them and things like that. So that's one of the big reasons I fight for. I want to make that, I fight strictly, one, because I'm fighting my own depression. Fighting helps with my depression. It helps me, is my therapy. Getting punched and getting choked, you don't get to think about anything else but to breathe and not get punched and choked. So it doesn't give you opportunities to do the woe is me game and things like that. I want to bring understanding to how we should address this and how identifiable it is. Cause a lot of times you're like, oh man, like I had no idea. And like, that's crazy. You had an idea. Like, there's no way there weren't signs and effects like that. And then, you know, the other reason I fight is because I think I'm pretty damn good at it. And I love it. And it's something I've been doing my whole life. I'm youngest of five boys with a German father, military background and things like that, Jewish community background, which means we're doing a lot of service. We're doing a lot of, you know, like training of things like that to be a community server and things like that. I grew up with crazy, crazy brothers. My oldest brother was a neo-Nazi, which is the most,
anti-Semitic.
Well, yeah, it's obviously anti-Semitic, but like, oxymoron. Yeah. You know, a Jew that hates Jews, you know, which we're the most self-loathing people in the world. But he took it way too far. You know, so I grew up with, and he was gang life his whole life. And I saw that guy die three times before he finally did die. He lived a crazy life. And I grew up getting my ass beat by them my whole childhood. And when I was, you know, 14, 15, I was insanely aggressive and really mean. And luckily I found MMA at 15 and wrestling wasn't enough. MMA is really what like set me to be a martial artist and to understand that, pacifism is what it's manly, and, you know, holding your anger and controlling your tongue and things like that is what makes you, you know, a real martial artist and a real man and things like that. And I found out that I was really good at that. I had a lot of success early on. You know, I was competing in a lot of jiu-jitsu competitions, some that aren't around like anymore, like Grappler's Quest, which is a huge Eastern national competition. I won that back-to-back years when I was 16, 17 years old. And then, you know, life got hold of me. Depression and things like that got hold of me. I had some severe injuries. When I was 19, I broke my entire face, which I think we talked about a little bit
one of our earlier
that we've done. And, you know, I take my whole teeth out and 44 breaks in my mandible, cut my tongue off, broke my jaw on both sides. And it wasn't the first time I broke my jaw. And I was just like, you know, this is stupid. Like, why am I pursuing this sport? This makes no sense, blah, 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 blah. Just to, you know, chase money for the next 6 years in doing real estate, which I was wildly successful with. And that was one of the biggest, that was one thing that crushed me, is like, when you realize I grew up very, very poor, that money isn't going to bring the happiness. So I realized the more money I had in my bank account, the less time I had, because I was working all the time, but the more depressed I was like, man, I thought this was going to bring me happiness. The fight game isn't for me. Maybe chasing success monetarily is for me. And it wasn't. That's what really scared me. Gave me a wake up call when I was 25 years old and said, I got to chase this. I got to chase this till the wheels fall off. I got to chase this until I said, there's no excuses. I did everything I can possibly do to say I did this. And, you know, I've been here almost 6 years now, and I'm about to turn 31. And I think, you know, for my age, I'm in a good place to get where I want to go. The people that we need to know me and mm-hmm. stuff like that. I think one of the biggest things in a fight game that a lot of people don't understand, I was just having this conversation with this, you know, typical 55-year-old MMA fan, that the best fighters in the world are not in the UFC. The best fighters in the world aren't even the most best promotions. The relationship, the best fighters and the guys that can promote themselves the best are the best fighters. If all the best fighters were in the UFC, it would be 100% all Dagestanian, Russians, and guys from Africa. That's all where all the money would be going. That's all we'd be doing. There are guys in the UFC, there's plenty of guys in the UFC right now that they, you know, make their fights for them and will, you know, not fight certain guys and will only fight these guys and things like that specifically because of their skill sets. And they know that they don't have the skill sets or will never get the skill sets or nor were trained to get the skill sets to beat those fights. And they have that little niche because of their popularity and their notoriety and their personality. And that's why they're in the UFC. Yeah, the great fighters. You have to be a good fighter first. That's the most important thing, obviously. But I truly believe there are some insanely great fighters that we don't know about. You know, I think Bellator has a lot of insanely good fighters, and you see a lot of them just don't get fights. They sit on the promotion with fighting once a year, twice a year at most, because no one wants it.
They do. I mean, but I do feel though that on the overall macro level, the greatest concentration of talent for fighters definitely is within the UFC.
Absolutely.
And then also
everyone's growing, they're getting closer.
Relates to they are, and to a certain extent, but it's also, I mean, it's something that, I mean, I feel like it's finally by some organizations starting to get addressed, but no other major organization has the anti-doping policy the way that the UFC does. And the UFC by no means is popular.
When UFC does, they were dope. They were test doping those guys all week long, bro.
But the tests that really run for
the cost of a USADA test is so different.
You know, for something that runs for all the stuff like EPO, all of those things. Yeah. Because I mean, hey, all due respect to one, but there's no chance in hell that they are natty. There's just no chance.
There's definitely some that like, just
that
can't.
There's zero chance that some of those guys are. And the there's one African man has nothing been around otherwise. Englane and Galani.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's zero chance that some of these guys are
not clean.
And I mean, hey, like it is what it is. And especially like,
do you think that is the case in UFC? Do you think that is 100% clean?
I don't think it's 100% clean. No. But I do think that
it's a lot better.
But I know with some guys, even just the threat. It's enough of a deterrent not to do it.
Yeah, exactly. It's the threat of it.
It's just like the threat of and the potential for it. And then, I mean, all the way up until this point, we hadn't seen a mass bust from somewhere like PFL, but PFL just had an entire run, including Tiago, who fought my boy Rob.
Yeah. What they're doing is insane. I mean, that Zagani and all that stuff is awesome.
You know, I think that it's a big
move. Doesn't really make sense though.
For me, if you're Francis, it's not a bad business move, but for him, but legacy as far as your fight career,
you don't give a damn about legacy.
I guess it depends on what's ultimately important to you. And did you want to leave the legacy as being one of the greatest champions ever, or did you want to leave the legacy of being someone who opened doorways and was a martyr for a cause, whatever?
Seems like the case, but you know, I know for him, he's literally said, you know, he doesn't love fighting and he took this as an opportunity for, you know, for wealth. And when you come from extreme poverty,
right,
it's not inappropriate for that to make it your drive.
But I also feel like it's not necessarily, am I going to say that he was ducking John Jones or that he was scared of John Jones or anything like that. Sure. I'm not trying to say that necessarily, but I do believe there is something to be said that he might have been scared to put his power and his legacy on the line.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I say this just from the standpoint of all of the peacocking, all of the contractual standoff, all of that went on, that could have been done after the John fight. He could have had a fight with John and then decided to go this route. You know what I mean? Like that could have been something that he did.
And he definitely knew he was going to win that fight for sure because his stock's worth a lot more. But
right. But you know, but that's the gamble you're taking, right? Yeah, and if you're really trying to have that legacy of being the greatest,
you got to fight the greatest
champion of all time. There is that. That's the golden platter. Put a bow on it. You're fighting who is considered the arguable GOAT on many people's lists. And, you know, I feel like in terms of like a fight IQ, all of that, for me, it's John. Like that's my personal GOAT.
It's John and DJ. I don't think it's.
Yeah.
Like for me, it's those two.
But yeah, with John though, like I just feel like that the opportunity to fight John, if Francis would have fought John and then he wins, then he has even more leverage and even more bargaining power. He can have doors.
Hard thing to do though, honestly.
It is, but that's where I say, like, I feel like personally, he did not want to risk his power play position and the leverage and the bargaining power that he had for the negotiations in that realm.
He would have gotten insanely paid for that fight as well. So it's, you know, I think that's one of the things that we can say is like, everyone said the reason he didn't take the fight is because the money wasn't good enough. But it turned out money was the what he asked for. The money wise, it was the other things that he wasn't going to get. And obviously, UFC is just too big of a promotion to be able to do that. They can't change the whole fundamental, you know, how they do things. Rightly so. But PFL doesn't. I think it doesn't necessarily make sense. I don't think Francis Ngannou is that big of a draw. With doing all of that is going to create something for them. It's just going to expand. It's not going to blow up their promotion that big. I don't think
he's fought an average of once a year since like 2018.
Yeah, I think what PFL is doing now is sick. One, they're paying the fighters a lot too. I love the cameras, the ref cameras, inside cameras they do and stuff like that. But it's interesting that they're there. But I tell you what, John Jones versus Ciryl Gane was the easiest bet in UFC history. When he came out as a freaking plus 100, I literally put my whole bankroll on that. I was like, man, please, like, thank you.
There was no way that John was going to come out of that fight not the victor. One, just even going into it. But then two, when John is going through or just gets that final checkpoint before he walks up the steps, gets into the cage, he has his trunks hiked up, and then he just starts smacking the shit out of himself all over the place and roars. That gave me an electrifying chill and goosebumps. You're like, oh, there is no way that this man is even gonna get touched.
Yep.
I mean, or even be threatened in any sort of position. And he goes out there and he wrecks shop against Ciryl Gane. But yeah, I mean, that's just the type of guy that John is, though, you know. But I feel like even – but from the PFL side, just to circle back to that with Francis and that deal, I think that from Francis and the PFL side, you better hope that you acquire Bellator at the end of the year.
Is that their idea? Something like that?
Yeah, they're in the process of potentially trying to acquire Bellator by the end of the year.
That's insane.
If they do, that obviously that gives him a roster and some names of some guys that he can go out there and fight. But as it is right now in the PFL, there's a significant share of their heavyweight roster who just popped in this whole wave of guys in this drug testing.
I saw that situation. Huge, a lot of dudes.
And then also, you know, I was talking with one of my really good fight friends, you know, a coach who's as deep into the weeds of the fight game as I am, or more in terms of knowing who people are. And I just asked him, like, right off the top, can you tell me what the name of the PFL heavyweight champion is? The guy who won it last year. Could you tell me who it is? No.
I know that you guys have a guy who just
the light heavyweight champion.
That's a light heavyweight. Yeah. The guy that you guys had to win.
But in terms of Francis's division,
like maybe five people in the whole PFL
on the whole roster
themselves, and right. Most of them are guys that have come into the limelight because of their lack of success in UFC or, you know, on Dana White Contender Series and things like that and stuff like that. So, no, I know their roster is not that great, not that huge. And
right.
Not to say it's not that great, because, of course, I don't know it not well enough to say this or anything like that. But it definitely is crazy to put money into someone like Francis Ngannou. Because, like,
it made sense to me, though. I'll be honest with you, dude. Like, I have it's on record for the record.
Yeah.
We said it on the MMA plug months before he was even in the free agent situation. Yeah. Said, I think that his next fight is going to happen outside of the UFC and it's going to be in PFL. Then a few months later, that's when the picture surfaced of Francis. And I can't remember if it was his mom, his aunt, or whatever. It was a relative,
right? Yeah, that was wearing the PFL shirt. Yeah, right.
But it just made too much sense. Where does he train when he's here in the States?
No, sure. I don't know.
Extreme Couture.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Whose house is that? That is Randy's and Ray Sefo's. That is.
Is that the, and that's who has PFL?
That's PFL. That's really? That's See, the, those, he's those the are big fixtures within the organization Randy at Couture. PFL. Randy Couture.
Interesting.
Randy does commentary for
him. I know he does comment. Yeah, he does do the commentary.
So he's got a big lead in there, and then Sefo just the same, you know. So there's direct ties and immediate connections there with the PFL. So that was just my intuition thinking about it.
More or less,
close, I mean, could very well have been. And who knows if down the way there's some sort of antitrust lawsuit or some sort of like whatever the legal collusion or tampering sort of thing is. You never know if that's something that comes about. But I'm not surprised just based off of that connection right then and there between the two of them.
Yeah.
But that is a good opportunity for us right there just to catch a quick break and throw it to our sponsors real quick.
What's up, guys? I know that you're all out there crushing the day, but did you know that you might be able to unlock some new levels to your human performance? Well, our partners over at Jocko Fuel have the perfect product lineup out to be able to help you maximize your full potential. Everything from supplements and vitamins all the way up through your protein powders, your greens with over 20 organic superfoods in the mix, to an anti-aging matrix, and some compounds that help you fight the fatigue as well as those times when you might be feeling a little bit sick. That is Jocko Fuel. Use the code MMAPLUG and get 10% off of your order today. What's the deal with all those cool t-shirts? Well, that is our partners over at www.mmatees.shop. MMATees.shop is an incredible martial arts and fighter-owned company that produces original artwork and designs that also offers the most equitable split on the market for any of the fighters featured out there. Once again, any of your purchases go to the direct benefit of the featured fighter out there. If you go to www.mmatees.shop today, you will find some exclusive new merchandise that you will not be able to find anywhere else.
All right, and we are back. Want to give a quick opportunity for Micah to shout out a couple more of the people on Team Super Jew.
Yeah, but just a side tangent that we were talking about. We talked about this before, and the betting world's kind of a weird world, especially when it comes to MMA. But yeah, that John Jones was the easiest money ever. And there's a lot of easy money to be made on the UFC cards. So his last card, literally, if that Korean woman would have won, we would have hit in every single fight right. And I lost a few parlays because of that, but we still did great. One person, if you guys follow MMA, which I'm sure you guys do if you're watching this commentary, is go check out on Instagram, free UFC fight picks. He's a guy that lives out here in Colorado. He's a sponsor of mine, financial, and big promoter of me on social media and things like this. He promotes a lot of fight game. He goes to all the fights. He is not only an MMA guru, he does a lot of other sports. He has a large group of people on Patreon that come together to for different sports and things like that. But as far as UFC cappers go, go check it out. He posts every single one of his bets. I post some of my bets. I don't typically post the big ones because I find it to be a little bit, you know, egotistical and things like that. But that guy, I think, is like 87 units up, which is for him 87,000. For me, I'm not nearly close to that because I'm not putting the bets that he is, but we absolutely kill it. You guys should be looking at that. You guys should be messaging him, tell him that I sent you. You should follow him. You should do his Patreon. It's $5 a month. It's absolutely absurd. He has all types of awesome giveaways. Gives away Demetrius Johnson gloves the other day and things like that for free and things. It's a lot of fun. Some of my other sponsors, restaurants, Upholt in Boulder. They're down in Cherry Creek area. They start out a food truck that I would go and visit every now and then when I lived in Littleton. Nutrition for me is insane. I've always been a self-proclaimed nutritionist. I've always studied nutrition in a very, 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 very deep fashion. My nutrition to myself is really important. I've been vegan for 2 years before. I was pescatarian for the last 4 years. I'm now basically eating a full diet and things like that and testing that out. And so I've been having a lot of success with this. And kind of like, you know, just stemming off depression. I literally had so many different health issues that I thought were because of my different ailments that I have, things like Lyme disease and things like that. And it turned out basically just depression caused me the inability to like digest food properly and things like that. And now I'm eating differently and things like that. And, you know, nutrition for everyone's different. But kind of was going off that. I get hit in the head a lot and sometimes you lose where you're going off of it.
You're talking about nutrition.
Right.
Sponsors, the restaurant.
That's right. Upholt and Boulder. My apologies. So for a food truck, when I saw them, the food was insanely healthy and delicious. I was like, this is crazy. I reached out to him like a year later, and this guy has his whole new restaurant now and everything like that and does insane catering. He actually is getting into nutritional building, so he's going to be starting to help me with my nutrition. We're going to be doing a week on, week off where I do my own meal prep. He does my meal prep and things like that. He's going to be opening that up to the public as well. They do catering events. They're unbelievable. They're absolutely delicious and insanely well-priced. But he's been an amazing representative for myself as well. Lastly, I'm not gonna mention all my sponsors, take up all you guys' time. Denver Underground Comedy. There's a lot of comedy clubs in Denver. Denver has a great comedy scene. I absolutely love comedy. I plan on post-fight life doing stand-up and stuff like that. A lot of the comedy places around here, I love them all. They get a lot of big name people, a lot of mid name people, but there are a lot of repeating acts. You're gonna see the same act that you could watch on YouTube. Denver Underground Comedy is amazing. They have a lot of local guys, a lot of small base guys, and then a lot of big time guys, and they specifically make sure they get guys on their first acts. So you're not gonna see anything that has been done for a year and our old jokes and stuff like that. They are almost always sold out for all their shows. They absolutely kill it. But if you ever get an opportunity, go check them out. That's a fun date night. They're wildly better priced than most of these comedy clubs. I was in Baltimore 7 years, which is one of the comedy meccas of US, more or less. And I used to go see huge names for less than what I spent, than what you'll spend at some of these other places. You'll see some of these names at his place for significantly less cheaper. And instead of them trying to chart making you get two drinks, they give you drinks and pizza. So it's like, it's a win-win. Go check them out. But stemming off that, more things that, you know, what am I doing? What am I pursuing? Things like that. We talked about how, you know, I basically, every fight, it seems, every week, it seems, maybe every day, I reassess my life and see where I am at a mental, physical, and professional standpoint. And every day you find out that there's something that you can do better, which is great. You know, some of the biggest things I've implemented as far as like training goes is swimming and running. Reasons why: swimming for, you know, great recovery and active workouts. But more importantly, because I absolutely hate both those things. I didn't grow up learning how to swim and things like that. My brothers used to basically almost drown me all the freaking time in the ocean. We grew up in Cali, so I was always scared of the water. And then running, I definitely don't have the body made for, and injuries have made it, you know, where it's not fun, but I still do it. And doing that physically, yeah, my cardio is better. And I definitely showed that in my last fight against Alex. If you go back and watch that fight, it is a dynamic fight. It's a weird fight. We get in a lot of interesting, unique, crazy positions. The pace of that fight was absolutely insane. And I was really, really happy I was able to keep that pace. But when I look back on it, I don't think it was because of the running itself. It was because I was doing stuff I didn't want to do, making myself uncomfortable every single day, destroying my ego and rebuilding it every day, saying like, oh my goodness, I can run this much, I can do this much, surprising myself. That's been one of the biggest things. My nutrition's been a really big thing. Getting rid of different type of outside environments that haven't been healthy for me has been a big part of it. Quitting a job that was great for me to really make it so I have no excuse to say that if this doesn't work, where do I go? If this doesn't work, I'm going to be, you know, consider myself a failure. I'm going to have to go refine a new business, a new thing to chase and pursue. But one of the things that I'm doing now that is going to set me up for the future is I've got all my licensing. I'm starting my LLC. Bye-bye. Be your best you. What that is I individual and group training. I do women's self-defense on Wednesday evenings over at FitSoul, one of my gym sponsors and things like that. It's a CrossFit-like workout with centering around building a strong woman's ego along with self-defense techniques and turning them into absolute killers. Some of the girls in that class are legit killers right now, and it's amazing seeing what they can do. Especially when I have certain privates that are, you know, guys that think they are doing what they think they can do. And there's these women that can easily kick their butt. But I do individual private sessions as well. And that stems from everything from healthy stretching, healthy nutrition, all the way into self-defense and all the way into teaching and getting someone ready to compete, amateur or pro if they want to. I have one of my guys, Johnny, who's the owner of FitSoul. He's going to make his Muay Thai debut here in the next month over at 5280. I'm really excited about that. He puts in the work and stuff like that. I definitely give a unique experience. There's a lot that I have to offer. And I'm a Jew, so I do know that money is the ultimate goal, but my prices are insane. Comparative to a lot of my other teammates and other people that are doing this and on the level of knowledge that I am. I went to school for biology and things like this. It's something that I've been around my whole life. It's an awesome bang for the buck. I train at Genesis, which obviously I need to mention. They are the basis of everything that I'm at here. It's one of the big reasons I came to Colorado. I actually came here. This was the first gym I ever looked at when I first moved to Colorado. It was just too big for me. I'm kind of a guy that needs both negative and positive reinforcement daily. So being in a big gym, it didn't fit perfectly for me. And maybe it was a little bit of a big fish complex. I was like, I don't think that I'm set for this, but Genesis has been my home. It's been a perfect fit for me and amazing for me. He's given me a lot of opportunities. One of the opportunities is I teach also kids MMA. We do our little ice class, 4:15 on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And that ranges from 8 to about 12. And then starting Tuesdays and Thursdays, I believe we're gonna be doing it at 6:30. I'm gonna have our elite kids, who's gonna be about 13 to 18 years old, dependently, and we'll surface them into our other programs. And on top of that, I know you guys just recently did this with one of your guys' fighters, but we are now gonna be a licensed associate with Rec Council Wrestling. I'm gonna be teaching Rec Council. So we have our whole program out there where we're going to provide everything for the kids. I've coached wrestling over 4 years. I've coached for rec and high school. I coached for one of the best wrestling high schools in Maryland, North Carroll, which is where I graduated from. I actually just recently looked up my stats because, like, apparently this is kind of important to be able to give people this. Over 100, I think 112 wins, 50 pin club. I have the Maryland state record for most tech falls in a single season. That's all I wanted to do my senior year. I didn't want to pin anybody. All I wanted to do was tech falls. Two-time state finalist, Division I wrestler for a year. I wasn't a D1 wrestler by any means. Went and wrestled D3 and had fun doing that. But these kids are going to learn a lot. We're going to teach them amazing wrestling. We're going to teach them health, nutrition, mental health, and things like that. We're going to teach these kids, which I think a lot of programs, and I don't mean to diss any programs, but I have seen it with some of the kids I brought on into my programs, is they're teaching them all the things physically, but they're not teaching them how to be a good martial artist. They're not teaching them how to be humble, how to be pacifist in situations, how to avoid conflict, and how to protect kids that can't protect themselves. I'm not saying that there's certain gyms that are making kids, you know, young bullies, but I've seen it in my classes, and you know, I've removed kids from my classes before because of that, things like that. So one of the fundamental things that is really important to me when I'm teaching youth, especially, and I'm teaching a variety from youth all the way to, you know, 50 year olds, is making sure that these people are not taking what I'm teaching them and using them in inappropriate ways. I want to build these guys' egos. I want to build their confidence. I want to build their mental happiness. I don't want to build them into something, you know, that is a threat to society and things like that. So message me out on Instagram, SuperJew_MMA. Reach out to Genesis.com. Reach out to any of the coaches there, Jake Ramos, me as well. We'll talk information. I usually provide your first couple classes free if that's a personal fitness or if it's a group fitness class. It is obviously, again, it's about financial compensation so I can pursue my dream more. But I have many different ways I can do that. I can easily do real estate a couple days a week and make money. I want to consume my life in the fight game. I want to be a fighter from the day time I wake up and the time I go to sleep. I really, really, really want to give back. I come from a family of community and charity. I've grown up doing 5,000 hours of community before graduating. That was a requirement from my mother. I want to give back. The prices for our rec program are pretty insane. Colorado is one of the meccas for wrestling. Talking to some of my friends that run some of these other programs, I know some of them cost up to like $10,000 a year, $1,000 a month. We do $500 intervals. It's $2,500 total. That provides your kid with all the equipment and stuff as well. So not only is it a bang for buck, but it's also a bang for what you're getting. I could easily be going and coaching high school. I could easily be going coaching a D3 program if I really wanted to. But I want to focus on youth. I want to build up my gym as well, build up Genesis Training Academy for how good of a gym it is. You know, one gym we, you know, I myself look at as a staple of what we want to be is a gym like you. You know, we have a lot of killers. Our gym is known as an OG gym. A lot of guys from all across country and states, your gym, sometimes even come and spar at our gym because it knows you can get some of the best rounds, some of the best minds of MMA. But one thing we need to build up is that smaller, that lesser community, maybe if that's a bad way to say it, but that next group, that next wave, we need to build that up. And I'm making that a fundamental requirement of myself for this next year. We're going to high schools and middle schools all across the state and try and build this program up for what I think it really can be. I'm really, 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 really excited to doing that. So now, you know, today my schedule was, I woke up, I did a 6-mile run with my dog. I did an hour of jiu-jitsu over at Catharos, which is another one of my base gyms and one of the best jiu-jitsu gyms in Denver and in Colorado, bar none. If you're in Littleton, if you're training here at Factory X, if you're training at Pound for Pound and you're not going to Catharos at least once a week, you're crazy. It's one of those OG gyms. Doors are open all day, every day. Come whenever. It's there's no egos. There's no guys trying to take your arms, your limbs, your neck off ever. The level of skill there is absolutely absurd. Steve Fordinsky, who's a head coach and operator there, Gracie Blackbell is honestly one of the most intelligent minds of practical MMA-based jiu-jitsu, the way we can implement certain things into the fight game, or it's just been revolutionary over there. And he has kids programs and stuff like that that I also want to promote and stuff like that. But now we're here, we're talking MMA and fighting for the next couple hours. And after that, I have 3 hours of privates with, you know, some of my best clients. So I have no opportunity to get away from this at this point now. I'm consumed in the lifestyle, and that's another way I've made myself more of a pro, you know? I realized when it comes to doing the privates, when I'm teaching these mainly men, you know, young age to middle aged men that are coming to me for several different reasons. Man, one, it's the most physically and mentally draining part of my day, period. Secondly, it's the most physically, maybe, but definitely mentally rewarding part of my day. And going in that last fight, I remember one of the things I was so confident about was, one, the training I was doing, but the classes I was doing, just going back and teaching fundamentals all day long, just cleans your fundamentals up so good. And especially in this fight game, especially at the level I'm at, where I'm building my professional career right now, it's about the fundamentals, right? I have a lot of funky, weird stuff that I love to do. I love question marks. I love Superman punches. I love hitting weird takedowns. But the fundamentals are what's going to get me to where I want to be, so I can start doing that stuff. So it's been so rewarding for me, and things like that. And you know, kind of a side tangent, just you know, talk about myself a little bit more. One of the biggest things, again, I think is very important in fighting. And one thing I think is exciting with what the UFC is doing with signing with the company that owns WWE, is I hope the UFC, and I know it's not going to be any cross-promoting or anything like that, but I hope UFC gets a little bit more into branding, more into it. And they're a mecca. They're a huge company. So for them to do it, it's hard. But, you know.
See, I don't see it going by that way, because they've gone the route of the NFL where it's right. More about the shield than
exactly.
It is
exactly. The individuality. Which it should be. It should be. But I think at the same time.
I think, though, that they – this is my take on why it's that way, though. Because you have guys like – Ari Shaffir in public, but you have
it doesn't smell because my diet's so good.
Situations like Ronda Rousey and Conor McGregor,
right?
Who in the past they gave so much power to or built so much on,
right?
That then once they decide to step away or want to do other things,
gone.
Then they're kind of left there with nothing but their nuts in their hand in the process. So I feel like
that's a building up. I saw with ONE FC, it's for the fighters. The fighters just dictate everything. Right. All fight week, they're like, oh, we're going to change the time to this. Oh, I'm not coming there. I'm not riding the bus to this. Yeah. And they're just like, okay. Letting people come during the back to say hi to their friends, which is against commission. Commission just sitting there like not knowing what to do. But you can't do that when you're that big of a promotion like the UFC. It's not feasible. But at the same time, all those guys like Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey, they push so big, so fast. Again, those are some of the best athletes we've had in the sport. Sean O'Malley is one of the best we've had in the sport. But we didn't know that at the beginning. But they pushed him like that from the very get-go.
Right.
And again, you can't – and this is something that Dana White talks about. You guys got to promote yourself. We're giving you a huge platform to build yourself. But we're not going to send you across the world and the country like we are some other fighters, every single event, to put you on TV and put you on things so you can brand – you need to brand yourself. And I think that's one thing that is one thing that separates me from a lot of people around me in the regional scene and where I'm at as a 1-0 pro fighter is, one, I have an awesome group of sponsors supporting me on a financial standpoint to give me the opportunity to train like a professional am. But again, like what I said before, I don't think necessarily, I think I am one of the best 25ers. I think I'm getting better every day. And I think I could be one of the best 25ers in the world. But if I'm a boring draw, that's not going to get me to UFC. I don't think I'm a boring draw. I know from my very first fight when you commentated me, you know, you're talking about, you know, my energy all week long, what I brought in before the fight and anything like that. I am a personality. I have a unique personality. I'm quirky. I'm fun. I understand the fight game very, very well. I have a great fight IQ. I think outside my tangible qualities of my physical attributes, I think one of the biggest things I have going for me is my mouth, my ability to talk and sell myself and things like that. And, you know, a little side tangent, like, you know, again, the people that I need to know me, they know me, and we know what we need to do to get to where I want to go and things like that. And we have a goal of being, you know, 4-0 or 5-0 and fighting on Dana White Contender Series or taking a contract with ONE FC. But I've been told by certain promotions that you can't use a Super Jew name. We don't want to use the Super Jew name. There's been certain announcers that won't say it in my fight and stuff like that. And I think that's just absolutely absurd. Cause one, it's like, you want us to promote ourselves as individuals and not sell fake. And that's one of the biggest issues. Most times when the guys try to sell themselves, they do it in a fake way and it doesn't look organic and natural and doesn't work. Guys like Jorge Masvidal just does it naturally. It works so well. Guys like Nate Diaz. I think I'm one of those guys, but like, you can't stop branding. You can't try to turn away branding, especially where my heritage, my culture is very, very important to me. My nickname is very important to me. It is a part of who I am and things like that. At the same time, if UFC comes knocking and says, hey, we'll sign you tomorrow, take away that nickname, I'm probably not going to be the Super Jew tomorrow, right? But I don't know. I honestly don't know. I've had that conversation. I thought, and it's not necessarily the UFC that is the one saying it, but I said, maybe I'll just go a different route and, you know, take stake in my own name and try to sell how I want to.
Winning solves things.
Yeah. And
that would be, me on the outside, just having a good grip on the game or, you know, having a lot of experience across the board. Those little things like that winning takes care of a lot of things.
Yeah, exactly.
Winning washes exactly. over a lot of stuff. You know,
it's like
one of my boys, Brandon Raw Dog Royval, yep. he always thought that once he got to the big show, he'd probably have to switch.
I remember
but then having, you know, Bruce Buffer in front of an entire packed house and speaking to the millions and millions yeah. of people watching at home saying Raw Dog over it, you know, and
I never even realized what his nickname, that's his nickname, basically. Man, I kind of associate to something else, but that's really hilarious. So that is that.
But yeah, that's, you know, just the thought or what some people would perceive from that. But
force them,
you know,
force them to accept me.
But when you come in on, you know, like 10 days notice, you fight Tim Elliott, who was a top 10 guy, yeah. you know, or has been a perennial top 10 guy all the time.
Easiest bet I've ever made, by the way.
Goes in there, finishes him.
Easiest bet ever made.
Goes out.
Arm triangle.
That was the arm triangle yeah. that goes out and obliterates Kai Kara France. You know, yep. So I mean, winning takes care of a lot.
I bet on you every single time, Branwary Val. I think it's absurd that he was he a plus going into that last fight against
against Nico, like,
which that was absurd. They had him at, man, that was the easiest money I've made in a long time. Thank you, Branwary Val. I should have put it out. I should have done for if I thought he was going to finish him too, but
oh yeah,
I, you know, I got that, it. I had to be safe, but.
That's the uncrowned champ right now.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've decided. It's like, you know what, like basically force them to love me kind of thing. And again, success winning is what makes that a lot easier, right? It's like what's Camo Schwartz's name?
Bryce Mitchell.
You know, it's like he has kept yelling for it and
kept
winning. He got it. And you know, now what's happened to him in the last year has been really interesting. I'm really excited to see what he does in his next fight back, coming off his first loss.
Hopefully, you know, this injury isn't too significant, you know, that he just had to pull out for. So.
Yeah, shoulder and thing, whatever. Yeah. Or that's what most people think it was shoulder.
On that's what it was reported as.
Yeah. But
back, something to that effect. Yeah, we're definitely running down on the tape side of things here. But just real quick before we cut out, what is where can people follow you on social media?
So SuperDrew_MMA. Find me there. You can direct message me on there as well for any class information. I'm very chill. I'm very, you know, come when you want, check it out. See how you feel. If it's not a fit for you and it's not a fit for everybody, I've turned down clients that want to continue to do it. But I want to build that up. So please reach out to me for that. Come just walk in at Genesis Training Academy. Basically any time of the day, we're open almost like 24 hours a day from like 9:30 till 8:30. We're there. So 12 hours a day, not 24 hours a day, obviously. But one, I just want to say, dude, thanks again for taking this interview, helping build my brand, helping build the regional brand, helping build your gym up. What you've been doing for your gym has been crucial to their success. I hope they know that. I hope they support you in a way that you should be. I want to say thank you to my coaches, Steve Rudinsky, Jacob Ramos, Art, who's taken over as my manager recently. He's the one who's been finding these awesome fights. It's hard to get fights for me. It's been insane. I've had insane amount of guys pulling out and stuff like that. And you know, you spend a lot of money in camps and travels and things like that, and getting MRIs and this like that. And to get people pull out is just, it's rough. So I'm happy to have him. And man, I'm really, 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 really happy to see where the regional fight scene in Colorado is going. I came here 5 years ago and I was blown away how good it was. And 5 years later, it's gotten so good. I love what Colorado Combat Club's doing. I love just that last card. I remember even the first three fights, guys are 0-0 amateur bouts, looking insanely good and crisp. It scared me. I'm like, man, I gotta get right back in the gym and get to work with these kids. Scary what's coming up. But just thank you for the opportunity, man. Thanks for listening. If you tuned in all the way through, I really appreciate it. I want to share my story more. I want to build this up. I want to help people with my fight game. I'm not in it for the money. I'm not in it for the fame. Although I do want money and fame for it. I have an ego I want to feed. I'm in it to keep myself here every day. I'm here to help people keep themselves here every day. And I want to build a community that we can be proud of here. So you're a part of that. And that's why I'm here. And you know, I look forward to the next conversation, next post win, whatever it is, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely, my friend. And that is Micah Haas, ladies and gentlemen. We want to give a quick shout out on the outro to a couple of our sponsors here. That's www.mmatees.shop. Make sure that you go there, pick up some gear. Also, JockoFuel.store. If you use the code MMA plug in the checkout, you will have 10% off anything within the catalog there. Thank you all so much for tuning in. If you follow me along on social media, you know that is at Comments for the Peanut Gallery. Please like, share, and subscribe, and we will see you next time.
Love you guys.
Thank you, my man.
Good shit. That's fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much for watching. Please hit that like, share, and subscribe button. That helps us continue to produce this original MMA content and bring it for you every single week.